Congress is expected to vote on a bill to rescue the housing market tomorrow. The legislation is intended to help hundreds of thousands of struggling mortgage holders and the ailing mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We asked Alan Meltzer, an economist at Carnegie Mellon University, to tell us what the legislation could mean for the U.S. economy.
Well, they really delayed doing anything about the problems of those mortgage giants for so long that they ended up with a crisis and they had to do something sudden and desperate.
What's your view on the possible downsides?
Well, the bills aren't going to do a great deal. That means they're not going to do much on the upside and they're not going to do much on the downside. The bigger risk is what's going to happen without the bills, and that is what are the risks that the taxpayers and the consumers face. I think the biggest risk that they face is that there may be many more bank failures. Now, bank failures aren't like the Great Depression. When people in the Great Depression faced a bank failure, they ran to get cash or gold. Nowadays, they just move to another bank. So that's an inconvenience, but it's not a disaster. But it does mean that the losses are going to be pushed on guess who?
Let me guess. The taxpayers.
Right.
Dr. Meltzer, is the housing crisis the problem in the American economy?
It is a problem. I would say that for most consumers, the biggest problem is the price of gasoline, the price of food. Take an ordinary person who makes the median income, about $47,000 a year. He now, if he drives his SUV to work, he pays $100 a week to get to work. It's hard for him to think about buying anything else. He comes home, complains to his wife. She says to him, "Have you been to the grocery store lately?" Under those circumstances, he has a hard time paying his credit card debt, maybe paying his some of his consumer loans. Those problems still lie ahead of us.
Is the U.S. economy in serious trouble, or are all of us just focusing on the negatives?
Well, there are a lot of negatives, and of course, the negatives are the news. Will the economy recover? Of course. Will this be the worst crisis that we've ever seen? Of course not. Are the comparisons to the Great Depression accurate? No. I mean, this is a serious problem, but it's not that serious a problem. It's one from which we'll recover. The big problem we face in the housing market, which gets so much attention, is a hard problem for anybody to do anything about at this point. The reason for that is that the value of the mortgages that are on old houses or houses that are out there are very hard to value until we know what those house prices are going to be. And nobody has a very clear idea as to how far they're going to fall and how fast they're going to fall. But until there's a good idea about where the housing prices are going to settle, we won't know what the mortgages are worth. And so people who buy and sell mortgages say, well, we don't want to do that right now. We'll lend you money for a day or a week, but a month? That's a long time. Too much can happen in a month.
Thank you very much. Dr. Alan Meltzer is a professor at Carnegie Mellon University and a historian of Federal Reserve policy. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Deb.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Deborah Amos.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Republicans in Congress use a new slogan to explain their energy policy. They say, find more, use less. The find more part is where they differ with many Democrats who tend to oppose more oil drilling for environmental reasons. As a slogan, find more, use less is crisp, it's clear, and it may run straight into the problem that both parties face when it comes to energy. Lawmakers want to bring down energy prices, but when they increase supplies and prices go down in the short term, people tend to consume even more, which leads to trouble in the long term. NPR's David Wellner explains.
If you want a nice summation of how Republicans in Congress view their Democratic colleagues' resistance to opening up new areas to oil drilling, consider this gastronomical metaphor by Georgia GOP Senator Johnny Isakson.
Quite frankly, in the United States of America, the Congress of the United States is sitting on a ham sandwich, starving to death.
But if Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander were to find that ham sandwich, he might still be starving if he stuck by the slogan, find more, use less, that he and other Republicans have been repeating.
We need to be finding ways that we can say, yes, we can, to finding more and using less.
That might defy a prime rule of the marketplace, which is that when you make something more available, its price falls and people can buy more of it. Still, Texas Republican John Cornyn is touting the same line.
We support the concept of using less, but we need to find more at the same time.
How much more? Here's Ohio Republican Senator George Voinovich.
Let's go after every single drop of oil that's available to us.
If Voinovich didn't seem to get the memo about using less, neither did Senator John McCain. Here's his latest TV ad bashing Democratic presidential rival Barack Obama.
Who can you thank for rising prices at the pump? One man knows we must now drill more in America and rescue our family budgets. Don't hope for more energy. Vote for it. McCain.
In fact, it's actually the Senate Democrats who've been making the case for using less when it comes to oil. They have yet to explain, though, how their own proposals to bring down gas prices would encourage conservation. Here's Majority Leader Harry Reid.
We can't continue forever to consume 25% or more of the world's oil when we have less than 3% of the world's supply. It's just simple math.
That much also seemed clear to President Bush, at least when oil was costing only half what it does today. The president advised Congress in January 2006 that not all was well with the State of the Union.
And here we have a serious problem. America is addicted to oil.
When Arizona Republican Senator John Kyle was reminded of that diagnosis by the president, he begged to differ.
I wouldn't characterize it as an addiction, but I would characterize it as a reality that in the foreseeable future, we're going to have to continue to use petroleum.
Oil is bad. We're addicted to it. We need to stop using so much of it. Finding more oil isn't going to help us use less.
That's Ana Aurelio. She lobbies Congress for a fossil fuel-free future on behalf of the research and advocacy group Environment America. Aurelio says a more accurate slogan for Republicans to adopt would be find more useless.
The last time we had a major change in energy policy that led to significant oil reductions was in 1975. After the OPEC oil embargo, that was the first time Congress put in place miles per gallon standards. Now, we shouldn't have to wait for these price shocks to change our policies, but right now we're in a price shock. So let's do it. Let's just go forward and do it.
Even Republicans who advocate more oil drilling recognize that the rise in oil prices has an upside. Here's New Mexico's Pete Domenici, the ranking Republican on the Energy Committee.
Something is bringing conservation to the mind and hearts of the American people, and we are beginning to use less. And I believe that's straight, pure cost.
Daniel Juergen of Cambridge Energy Research Associates agrees. Price, he says, is a powerful motivator for people to change their behavior, as long as that price is high enough.
Last year, the U.S. actually had peak demand for gasoline, and U.S. gasoline demand is now actually declining. We've seen the first fuel economy standards revision in 32 years. That wouldn't have happened if you didn't have price. And at the same time, it's provided a tremendous stimulus to alternatives, to investment in new energy.
President Bush made a remarkably similar observation last week at his White House news conference.
I mean, you know, it's interesting what the price of gasoline has done is it caused people to drive less. That's why they want smaller cars. They want to conserve.
So if you really want Americans to keep conserving or using less, would you also advocate finding more oil, which could have the effect of driving down prices by increasing supply? That's precisely what President Bush proposed doing last week when he lifted his father's executive ban on exploring the U.S. outer continental shelf. And that's the paradox of find more, use less. David Wellna, NPR News, The Capitol.
Let's look a little deeper into the first part of that find more phrase David Wellna mentioned, which raises a basic question. There's increasing support for more oil exploration off the U.S. coastlines, but many companies already have leases to drill in the Gulf of Mexico. So why aren't they drilling there? NPR's Christopher Joyce explains.
High gas prices are weakening support for the moratorium on drilling for oil and gas along the Pacific and Atlantic coastlines, and members of Congress know that. Representative Steny Hoyer, a Democrat from Maryland, recently spoke for those who say, okay, let's drill for more oil, but not in those protected areas. Let's get more out of areas in the Gulf of Mexico that oil companies have already leased.
Drill on the leases you have or let somebody else do it. But don't just sit on them while Americans are paying $4 a gallon. Use it or lose it.
The it in use it or lose it refers to offshore leases sold to oil companies by the Federal Interior Department. Leases that have yet to be fully explored and drilled.
Inventorying possible oil supplies is not what the American people want. What the American people want is they want production.
In fact, the Minerals Management Service, which sells offshore leases to oil companies, reports that as of fiscal year 2007, there were about 8,500 outstanding oil and gas leases. Of those, about three-quarters are officially not producing. But MMS Director Randall Luthy says that's misleading. Even though a lease can run from 5 to 10 years, it often takes longer to find out if there's enough oil under the seabed to make it worth developing. There are numerous permits to get, and many leases are challenged in court. Sometimes companies extend their leases to deal with that, but most leases don't ever produce anything.
I like to liken it to having a fishing license. A company has a lease. They're able to go out and look. I have a fishing license. I might have a fishing license for the entire lake, but that doesn't mean I'm going to catch fish.
Critics of big oil suggest that it suits oil companies to delay as oil prices keep rising. Luthy disagrees.
I'm having a hard time following that argument. Again, thinking of what oil is right now, it seems to me there's more than sufficient economic benefits to develop any leases that you could possibly do at this time.
Luthy notes that oil companies spend as much as $100 million for a lease. But the leasing system may encourage companies to bite off more than they can chew. Phil Verleger is an oil economist. He says it's in an oil company's interest to keep looking for new prospects, even when they're speculative.
They can develop the existing properties, but as they peter out, they have no prospects, and their share price goes down.
And MMS, which describes its leasing plans as aggressive, is eager to sell more leases. Its most recent sale brought in $3.6 billion. Verleger says oil companies keep buying, not just where there might be oil, but adjacent to those sites to keep competitors out.
It's as if somebody puts a plate of spaghetti down in front of you and you start to eat the spaghetti, and then they put down pheasant or sirloin or something like that, and they say, well, you want this? And so, of course you want that, and then what you have to decide is which plate to eat.
Right now, the eating may have to wait. Oil experts say there aren't enough drilling rigs and oil workers to develop the sites they already have, let alone new ones in currently protected areas. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
Starting this week, more than 1 million low-wage workers get a pay raise. The federal government's minimum wage is set to jump 70 cents to $6.55 per hour. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
This is the second of three annual increases in the minimum wage that were ordered by Congress last year, after a decade with no increase. Ross Eisenbray of the Economic Policy Institute says even with the latest boost this week, minimum wage workers won't make up the ground they've lost to inflation.
The minimum wage has been losing its value pretty steadily. You know, it's been falling, then it bumps up a little, falls, bumps up a little, but has a long way to go to catch up to where it was all throughout the 60s and 70s.
In fact, nearly half the states already require a higher minimum wage than the federal government does. But the federal minimum still governs pay for many workers, especially in low-wage industries like restaurants and hotels. Eisenbray says when the federal minimum jumps to $7.25 an hour next year, some 12 million workers will be affected.
6.5 million, I think, will get a direct bump, and then people who are just above 7.25, because their managers and bosses will want to keep some distance between them and entry-level workers, will give them a raise too. It's still a very real thing for millions of people.
Raising the minimum is still controversial, since opponents argue it forces employers to cut staffing. 10 states have taken steps to index their minimum, so wages rise automatically with inflation. Scott Horsley, NPR News.